of Sayyida Fatima al-Zahra and her grief. Well, as we promised in the previous section, or as is the norm for our episodes of this program Bookshelf, we normally read an excerpt from the book that we introduced for that specific episode. Here it is. I'm going to read about a part that says her abstinence and piety. Sayyid ibn Tawus relates that when the two verses of the Quran were revealed, "And verily hell is certainly the promised abode of them all. For it, the hell, are seven gates, and for each of those gates will be a separate party of the sinners assigned." The Prophet wept abundantly, such that his companions also wept upon seeing him. However, the companions could not understand why the Prophet wept, and none could question him beholding his state. It was the habit of the Prophet that whenever he saw Fatima, he was delighted, and thus one of the companions went to Fatima to bring her to the Prophet. When he reached her house, he saw that she was grinding barley in the mill and reciting the following verse of the Quran, "And what is with Allah is better and more lasting." The man went and saluted her and informed her about the Prophet's lamentation. Immediately, Fatima stood up, put on a worn-out veil, which contained 12 patches of the leaves of date palms, and came outside. When Salman's sight fell upon her, he wept and said, "Oh, the grief, the daughters of Caesars, Roman kings, and Khosrows, Persian kings, adore dresses of brocade and silk, while the daughter of the Prophet wears a worn-out and patched veil." Fatima came to the Prophet and said, "O Prophet of Allah, Salman is surprised at my dress, when by the Lord who has chosen you by truth, 5 years have passed since we use a sheet made of sheep's hide. We sleep upon it at nights, and during the day we turn it and lay leaves for the camels to eat, while our pillow is also made from the leaves of date palm." The Prophet turned towards Salman and said, "Verily, my daughter is among the foremost ones in the eyes of Allah." Fatima then asked the Prophet, "O dear father, may I be your ransom? Why do you weep?" The Prophet recited the above verses revealed by Jibrail or Gabriel. When Fatima heard the name of hell, she fell down prostrating upon the ground and constantly repeated, "Woe, woe upon those who enter the fire of hell." As you can see, I read only a short excerpt from this book entitled Her Abstinence and Piety. We were introducing the book House of Sorrows, The Life of Sayyida Fatima Zahra and Her Grief, written by Sheikh Abbas Qumi and translated by Ejaz Ali Turab Hussain Bujwala. You can easily download this book from al-islam.org and also listen to our programs and the previous episodes of this program Bookshelf in our archives. Simply search Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio. And once again, we need to say that we dedicated this program to Lady Fatima al-Zahra, the daughter of the Holy Prophet of Islam, peace be upon him, and his holy family, because these are the days that belong to Fatima al-Zahra, salamullah alayha. You were listening to the program Bookshelf on IRIB English Radio, hosted by me, Muhammad Jabbar. Thank you very much for listening to us. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
Ministry.
There's no doubt that the military aggression against Lebanon became inaccessible to the pattern adopted by the Israeli enemy since 1978, which acquired another form of aggression that targeted the supporters of the resistance in the only country that has so far defeated Israel. All plans failed, so Washington decided to suffocate the allies and supporters of the resistance by implementing economic sanctions and by designating Hezbollah an international criminal terrorist organization, all while supporting the largest terrorist entity on the planet, Israel. This new plan required making judicial arguments, assembling files, and falsely linking them together to establish the party's involvement in terrorism and drug crimes on the one hand, and assigning Israel's proxies in the U.S. administration to oversee the implementation of penalties and prosecute people alleged to be affiliated with the party. Their last attempt at sabotaging any entity related to or affiliated with Hezbollah was hacking the party's Al-Qard al-Hassan financial institution. Qard al-Hassan is a 36-year-old association that grants small loans with zero interest to help borrowers manage their life hardships, like rebuilding houses, opening small businesses, and covering marriage hardships, regardless of their religious affiliations. Despite the institution's assurance that hackers had no access to any of the internal data or account numbers of depositors, the hackers till this day keep posting Excel sheets that anyone can fill or scanned files of depositors' IDs or procuration papers. All the leaked documents were scanned photos, obviously taken from a certain folder of the internal administrative communication database between the different departments of each branch and between branches. It was not that of the actual database of the depositor's account details. Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah clarified last week that Al-Qard al-Hassan Association gives loans on the basis of mortgaged gold or a mutual guarantor between the borrower and the association, and in no way or form does it fund Hezbollah. Another plan to twist the arm of the resistance falters. Actually, it gave a great marketing push for the association, which saw a considerable turnout of new depositors to open accounts after the speech of Hezbollah Secretary General Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah. Welcome to the Middle East Stream. I'm Marwa Osman. Hezbollah, which has been suffering from 4 years of Trump's maximum pressure campaign against its resistance forces, is hesitant to show optimism following Joe Biden's presidential election victory. Washington's approach resulted in multiple sanctions on Hezbollah members and companies linked to the political bloc. Add to that, high probability of hostilities continue to materialize on the border with occupied Palestine, making the chances of a sudden escalation increase steadily. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Dr. Mohsen Saleh, political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Dr. Saleh. Now, Lebanon's economy is highly dollarized, Dr. Saleh, which gives Washington a tremendous leverage to use economic sanctions to deter the Lebanese public from supporting their own resistance back home, the liberation movement in Lebanon. The U.S. has managed to target several political allies of the resistance in Lebanon as well. Now, do you think that they might move forward towards targeting civilians now, or rather just back off after maybe Trump just leaves office?
Well, hi. I guess the United States has used all what it has in order to put down the ambience of Hezbollah, the popularity of Hezbollah. Fortunately, they did not succeed, especially the people, the environment, are embracing this resistance, highly embracing this resistance, and the speeches of Sayyid Nasrallah last one and before the last show this confidence of the people in the region towards the resistance. So I guess the Americans, whatever they use of their instruments or sanctions, the resistance was and still able to overcome all these silly decisions from the American administration, especially
one of the major targeted associations that were linked to Hezbollah and lately targeted, maybe late 2020, was the Qard al-Hassan Association, which is a financial institute that gives out interest-free loans and allows for commission-free deposits. This association was hacked, and I actually spoke with the directors of Qard al-Hassan, who are not doing any media interviews so far up until now, but they told me that the hacked server was that which was used for internal administrative communication between the branches and between departments of one branch in particular. So it was not that of the actual database of the depositors' accounts information, rather just Excel sheets that anyone could actually put out there and maybe a couple of scanned files, which include maybe IDs and procuration papers. Do you think that this is enough damage to affect the reputation of such an institution and at least maybe shake its reputation in front of the depositors?
Well, I believe the statements was made by Al Qard Al Hassan managerial committee, and that would not influence the clients of Al Qard Al Hassan, and the people, they have a sufficient confidence of this institution, which helps poor, helps students and doctors and people who want to have a loan in order to buy a car. This is very a small thing, I guess, in terms of the people, especially in this crisis. You mentioned the economic crisis in Lebanon. However, I would say Al Qard Al Hassan accelerated its activities. The people now, as Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah said, the people would go to Al Qard Al Hassan and put deposit in this bank, their only bank without interest, and they have full confidence with of their money that it's in a safe place. That's why I guess all the these hackers could not influence the trust or even influence the Al Qard Al Hassan institution and the programs, the computer programs. They issued this statement. People were relieved, and they are having this good relationship between the clients and the managerial committee.
Mind you, we should also remind the people that it's at times when the people's money are actually locked up in the actual banks
in the
of
banks,
Lebanon.
Yes,
at the same time, it's a secure place for them to invest. But going back to the sanctions and the pressure against Hezbollah, we had Biden stating that when he takes office in at least like 7 or 8 days, he will end Trump's maximum pressure policy against Tehran, hence against all the allies of the resistance in the region. Why is Hezbollah still very hesitant of showing any signs of optimism following Biden's victory?
Well, we have been taught, we have been really earned a lot of knowledge about these administrations, whether the Democrats or the Republicans. If we don't see any advantages from any of them, so we can't talk about good intentions from these presidents. So let's wait and see. Biden and Obama, his president, he was vice president of Obama, did not show any good intentions towards Iran or towards Lebanon. But I guess the balance of power now in the whole world is changing. Mm-hmm. Probably would the Americans go back to their mind and let the peoples determine their self-identity and self-independent and their autonomy and their slogans and their way of life, I guess that needs to be waited until Biden can really be there in the White House.
We don't know if he's going to make it or not. One more threat is out there in the face of all Lebanese people is Israel. It keeps threatening a resumption of full-fledged hostilities against the Lebanese resistance, Hezbollah, but mainly against all of Lebanon here. But especially they keep saying that in the near future. They keep repeating that word. But, I mean, its leaders were obviously disappointed by the loss of Trump in the election, and they basically have lost their main, focal point of normalization in the region in West Asia. Is a full-fledged war against Hezbollah a viable option for Israel at this point in time?
Absolutely not. They have tried many times in many wars against Hezbollah and against Lebanon, and they failed in all these wars. So I guess they are trying to maneuver the psychology of people, but the people in the south and in all Lebanon, they challenge these statements from Netanyahu or from some of its soldiers, but I guess the upper hand is for the resistance in this region, especially in the south. And I guess this maneuver would not help them. Otherwise, they will be the losers in any coming war. If they try to attack any place in Lebanon, even they can't escape even the avenge of Hezbollah for one fighter martyred in Syria. How could they dare to do such a war? I really further say that they can't and they would not do that.
Well, we have to test maybe and see whether these threats are going to be actually viable or not. I want to thank you very much, Dr. Mohsen Saleh, political commentator, for joining us in Beirut to talk about the maximum pressure game that Washington is playing with the axis of resistance and namely Hezbollah in the region. Thank you for being with us. Please stay tuned. Next, we will be talking about the new agreement in the PGCC.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
Qatar will not halt or make concessions in its relationships with Iran. This is what the Qatari foreign minister declared last week following a solidarity and stability agreement that was signed by Persian Gulf leaders in a landmark summit that took place in the ancient desert city of Al-Ula. Saudi Arabia and its allies have restored full relations with Qatar, ending a huge rift that erupted 3 years ago. New Persian Gulf ties in this following report.
The end of the so-called Persian Gulf Rift would constitute a major regional step to adopt a foreign policy that is more attuned to the sensitivities of the other members and thus moderate eventual excesses. This was evident when Qatar declared that it will not alter its relations with Iran last week following a solidarity and stability agreement that was signed by the Persian Gulf leaders in a summit that took place in the ancient desert city of Al-Ula. Saudi Arabia and the UAE reconciling with Qatar is a sign that the latter has made few concessions after securing a deal to break the blockade against its borders. Another important development could be vis-à-vis the relations with the Islamic Republic of Iran. Qatar's connections with the Persian power are well known and could be used as a means for an ultimate timid rapprochement in the region of West Asia. Many people have already forgotten that the rift started in 2017 with serious policy differences over how the countries of the Persian Gulf should deal with Iran and treat the Muslim Brotherhood groups contending for influence in the war on Syria. As the rifts begin to heal with this new announcement, the underlying differences have not really been resolved. The parties, at least, have agreed to end the rift's more visible and disruptive effects. The ripple effect of the PGCC internal rivalries has been central to the proxy dynamics that have underpinned and shaped the outcomes of political and military developments across the region of West Asia and North Africa since the popular uprisings began in 2011. Despite the purported rapprochement between Persian Gulf parties, it is worth noting that this is seemingly influenced by a desire to preempt pressure from an incoming Biden administration more than a genuine commitment to conflict resolution. As such, the agreement within the PGCC is very unlikely to significantly affect geopolitical dynamics beyond the states involved. Third-party states such as Libya, Tunisia, Sudan, Morocco, and Egypt will remain theaters where Persian Gulf players and their allies will continue their proxy interventionism and their scramble to settle geopolitical scores.
To discuss this issue with us from London is Sami Hamdi, editor-in-chief of the International Interest. Thank you for being with us, Sami, to discuss this new agreement between the Persian Gulf states, between Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and also Egypt is there. They cited Doha's ties to Iran and Turkey as core reasons for their extraordinary decision back in 2017 to cut diplomatic and transport links to Qatar. Yet today, after the new signed agreement between Qatar and Saudi Arabia, the former still insists that it will not change its relationship with Iran. So what was the point of the severance to begin with?
I think it's important to remember or to highlight that the blockade had nothing to do with Qatar's relations with Iran or any of the 13 conditions that were imposed, except when it comes to Al Jazeera's coverage. The blockade was imposed primarily because Saudi Arabia, UAE, Egypt, and Bahrain were essentially very worried and very concerned by Qatar's ongoing support for movements lean more towards the popular desire, whether that's in Tunisia, whether that's in Libya. By that, I don't necessarily mean that Qatar supported democracy or democratic trends, but that Qatar supported a movement that threatened the regimes of Saudi Arabia, of UAE, of Egypt, and Bahrain. And I think the Iran point was more to try to get the US on board, to get Trump on board, as opposed to anything seriously regarding Qatar and Iran's relationship.
Well, that's really interesting, Sami, because it's being propagated on most Western mainstream media that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, the kingdom's actual day-to-day ruler, wanted to resolve the rift to gain credibility with the upcoming Biden administration in the US. What is Mohammed bin Salman afraid of here? So, I mean, Biden becomes president and he is still at war with Qatar. What would happen then? Who cares?
I think the Democrats have always been averse to Mohammed bin Salman following the murder of Khashoggi. They've been averse to Saudi Arabia's role in the war in Yemen and the humanitarian crisis and the inability of the Saudis to bring about a resolution either by peace or either by military solution in Yemen. The U.S. is not really interested in peace. It's always interested in who the winner is. But given there is no winner and given that there is a humanitarian crisis, there is a fear that the Democrats will implement retrospective punitive measures on Mohammed bin Salman. Mm-hmm. Mohammed bin Salman believes that Al Jazeera and Qatar's extensive media outlets in English and in Arabic have played a key role in fueling anti-Bin Salman sentiment in Washington. Their lobbying networks, very influential, have influenced attitudes in Washington towards Mohammed bin Salman. That's Bin Salman's perspective, by the way, not necessarily mine, which is that Bin Salman's actions naturally bring about...
I wanted to say that, because basically there are war crimes in Yemen.
So a deal from the Qataris that the media outlets will be quiet, that they will give him some peace, and this is about shelving contentious issues, including Yemen, where we saw the formation of a government and a willingness to now negotiate with the Houthis, including this idea that Bin Salman now is trying to shelve any contentious issue that might draw antagonism from Biden. And this is why it's important to note, if Trump had won, it's very unlikely we would have seen any reconciliation
exactly.
at all.
Exactly. Well, also, we have many analysts, especially regional ones, saying that the UAE in particular had been reluctant with regard to the rapprochement that happened with Qatar, partly because of Abu Dhabi's concerns about Qatar's growing relationship with Turkey as the powers struggle between the two states intensified last year, specifically in Libya, for example. But what changed UAE's mind? I mean, could there be any benefit for them out of this reconciliation right now?
The UAE's power in the region is underpinned by its alliance with Egypt and Saudi Arabia and taking advantage of their weaknesses. And that is what has made the UAE into a regional power. It's an alliance of fear between UAE and Saudi Arabia, not an alliance of common aims or ambitions. And the UAE is seething with anger that bin Salman acted unilaterally and dragged UAE into a reconciliation that it did not want, it did not seek. You will remember that Youssef Al-Outaiba, the ambassador, UAE ambassador to Washington, said in the middle of November that reconciliation was not on anybody's priority list. There was a sort of defiance coming out of the UAE. Abdul Khalik Abdullah on Twitter, a prominent UAE commentator, said there will be no reconciliation without the UAE's consent, drawing the ire of Saudis, who said, who are you to talk about Saudi Arabia like this? We are the big brother in the region. Mm-hmm. I think the UAE did not want it because it believes it doesn't need this reconciliation. The UAE believes that its normalization of ties with Israel puts it in good stead with an incoming Biden administration. It's been developing its ties with Iran over the past 2 years, so it's ready for these negotiations that are expected between Biden and Iran. And it believes that bin Salman, his fears are exaggerated over a Biden administration, and that together they are able to resist any antagonism from Biden. And this is why we see that even statements coming out from UAE and from Egypt, which suggest more confusion than acceptance of this reconciliation. And also Qatari insistence that this was more a reconciliation between, a bilateral reconciliation between Saudi and Qatar as opposed to with the wider countries.
I want to thank you very, very much, Sami, and I will have you back again so we can talk about this. Thank you for your time. Now, please stay tuned next week. We will talk more about this on the Mideast Stream.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder a Republican who has been out of office for 2 years, was in his post when state-appointed managers in Black City of Flint switched the city's water to the Flint River in 2014 as a cost-saving step while a pipeline was being built to Lake Huron. However, the water was not treated to reduce corrosion. A disastrous decision affirmed by state regulators that caused lead to leach from old pipes and spoil the distribution system used by nearly 100,000 residents. The disaster made Flint a nationwide symbol of governmental mismanagement, with residents lining up for bottled water and parents fearing that their children had suffered permanent harm. In this regard, we have prepared for you a news report written jointly by Ed White and David Egger, titled "Michigan Plans to Charge Ex-Governor Snyder in Flint Water Probe." This article has appeared on the front page of the Associated Press News Agency's website. Here's the detail. Former Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, his health director, and other ex-officials have been told they are being charged after a new investigation of the Flint water scandal, which devastated the majority Black city with lead-contaminated water and was blamed for a deadly outbreak of Legionnaire disease. Two people with knowledge of the planned prosecution told the AP recently that the Attorney General's office has informed defense lawyers about indictments in Flint and told them to expect initial court appearances soon. They spoke to the AP on condition of anonymity because they were not authorized to speak publicly. The AP could not determine the nature of the charges against Snyder. Former Health Department Director Nick Lyon and others who were in his administration, including Rich Bird, a friend who was the governor's key troubleshooter while in office. Courtney Covington Watkins, spokeswoman for the Attorney General's office, said only that investigators were working diligently and will share more as soon as we are in the position to do so. Snyder, a Republican who has been out of office for 2 years, was governor when state-appointed managers in Flint switched the city's water to the Flint River in 2014 as a cost-saving step while a pipeline was being built to Lake Huron. However, the water was not treated to reduce corrosion, a disastrous decision affirmed by state regulators that caused lead to leach from old pipelines and spoiled the distribution system used by nearly 100,000 residents. Snyder's attorney, Brian Lennon, released a blistering statement recently saying a criminal prosecution would be outrageous. He said the state prosecutors have refused to share information about these charges with us. Lennon claimed rather than following the evidence to find the truth, the Office of a Special Counsel appears to be targeting former Governor Snyder in a political escape. Snyder apologized for the catastrophe during his 2016 State of the Speech and said government at all levels had failed Flint. Lee Ann Walters, a mother of four who is credited with exposing the lead contamination, said she wants details about the charges. Walters said the very fact that people are being held accountable is an amazing feat, adding, "But when people's lives have been lost and children have been severely hurt, it doesn't seem like enough." The disaster made Flint a nationwide symbol of governmental mismanagement, with residents lining up for bottled water and parents fearing that their children had suffered permanent harm. Lead can damage the brain and nervous system and cause learning and behavior problems. The crisis was highlighted as an example of environmental injustice and racism. At the same time, bacteria in the water was blamed for an outbreak of Legionnaire. Legionna bacteria can emerge through misting and cooling systems. triggering a severe form of pneumonia, especially in people with weakened immune systems. Authorities counted at least 90 cases in Janice County, including 12 deaths. The outbreak was announced by Snyder and Leon in January 2016, although Leon considered that he knew that cases were being reported many months earlier. In 2018, Leon was ordered to stand trial on involuntary manslaughter charges after a special prosecutor accused him of failing to timely inform the public about the outbreak. His attorneys argued there wasn't enough solid information to share earlier. By June 2019, the entire Flint water investigation was turned upside down after more than 3 years and millions of dollars. Prosecutors working under a new attorney general, Dana Nessel, dismissed the case against Leon as well as charges against seven more people and said the probe would start anew. The decision didn't affect seven people who had already pleaded no contest to misdemeanors. They cooperated with the investigators and their records were eventually scrubbed clean. Leon's attorney said he was turned down when he asked prosecutors for a copy of new charges. Chief Chamberlain claimed the new case would be a travesty of justice. Testimony at court hearings had raised questions about when Snyder knew about the Legionnaire outbreak. His urban affairs advisor, Harvey Collins, told a judge that the governor was informed on Christmas Eve 2015, but Snyder had told reporters 3 weeks later, in January 2016, that he had just learned about it. Defense attorney Randy Levine said he was informed recently that Bird, a Flint native, would face charges. Another lawyer, Jamie White, said former Flint Public Works Chief Howard Croft is being charged. Levin said of Bird, when the Flint water crisis hit, he wasn't assigned by Governor Snyder to go to Flint, but rather he raised his hand and volunteered. A resident, Edna Sabuco, 61, said she still uses water filters, although the lead service line at her home of 40-plus years has been replaced, along with more than 9,700 others in Flint. Sabuco said of Snyder, he swept things under the rug, in my opinion, and to me that makes him just as guilty as everybody else, because he should have some outshining like a canary. Separately, the state, Flint, a hospital and an engineering firm have agreed to a $641 million settlement with residents over the water crisis, with $600 million coming from Michigan. A judge is considering whether to grant preliminary approval.
Spiritual message of Islam.
His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا ونبينا أبي القاسم المصطفى محمد وعلى آله الطيبين الطاهرين لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين أجل الله تعالى فرجه الشريف وجعلنا من أعوانه وأنصاره وشيعته. We were discussing some of the main features of the community of Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, and I talked last night about truthfulness, and I believe that this is a very important quality of a mu'min and also a Muslim community. Inshallah, I hope by the discussion that we have tonight, it will become crystal clear that truthfulness is very fundamental. It's not like some, for example, other qualities that are necessary, but even without them, you can still say, I am a mu'min, but not a good mu'min. No, without truthfulness, it's very difficult to be counted as mu'min. Now, I want to start a Quranic discussion here about haq, and inshallah, I mentioned some of the major points. It's such a broad concept and such a far-reaching concept in the Quran. Everything starts and ends with haq in the Quran. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says to Prophet Dawood, Ya Dawood, Inna ja'alnaka khalifatan fil ard. We made you khalifa, vicegerent. Allah's, like Allah's deputy, khalif on the earth. What does khalifatullah do on the earth? Fahkum bainan nas bil haq. Judge among the people according to haq, or rule according to the haq. Hukm can mean judgment or rule. So Khalifatullah is the one who judges according to haq. So if you always judge according to haq, you are very close to Khalifatullah. If you judge according to batil, you are against Khalifatullah. Allah is Haq and His Khalifa rules and judges according to Haq. So if you want to be close to them, you have to do the same. It's very difficult. You know, sometimes people come to you and ask for advice. You know how difficult it is to give advice and how great is this responsibility. A mu'min or non-mu'min comes to you and asks for consultation, for advice. You have to observe Haq. I give you one example. You know, this example is always in my mind, worries me. You know, it is said that there was a very pious person who was a kind of assistant for one of Maraje in Iraq. Very nice, very reliable. So a person wanted to marry a girl and wanted to inquire about this girl, went to this man who is better than him. He's such a nice person. He's trusted by the marja. So he went to this person and said, "You want to marry this girl. What is your idea?" He had the idea that he wanted this girl for his own son. So he was now in a difficult situation. If said this girl is very good, you know, and I want it for my own, you know, son, then that person would be more interested. So he didn't say the truth. He just tried to be clever, as we call it. It is not to be clever. So he said something to change the mind of that person. Okay, they didn't propose marriage to that girl. That person died. Then some people had this dream. He said, I am suffering in Barzakh. Because when I was asked about that girl, my intention was to make her marry my son. So I didn't give true statement. Then when I proposed to my son didn't accept. So that girl didn't marry. And now I am being punished because of not being truthful in my judgment. Very simple. You never think that, you know, saying something or not saying something can change the life of another person.
Oh, what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow. His door is open no matter who you are. Just take the first step, you'll see it's not so far. Down this road that holds all the answers. Open your heart to something greater. His holy book speaks pure and true, and always tells us what we must do. His last prophet was sent as a guide, an example by which we abide. There is salvation for those who seek to find the one and only source of peace and understanding of why we are here, who created us, who we must fear. So what a wonderful world this would be if we all open our eyes to see. He is all that we need right now, and we can all come together somewhere, somehow.
There are many stories like this. There is a story that Ayatollah Tehrani, Sayyid Muhammad Hussein Tehrani, in his book Ma'at Shanasi, I don't know if you have heard this book, of course, it's Farsi, but it's a very good book. It's 10 volumes on knowing the hereafter. He quotes a very beautiful story from one of ulama, that he had a kind of encounter with someone in Barzakh who was suffering, and it's a very beautiful story how he went to Barzakh. I don't want to go to details. He saw this person has a palace. A palace. Because, you know, Barzakh is a place that you can be enjoying yourself in temporary heaven, or you can suffer in temporary hell. Al-qabru imma rawdatun min riyad al-jannah aw hufratun min hufarin niran. So before the day of judgment comes, still we have temporary hell and heaven. For the people who are very good, their heaven starts in Barzakh. People who are very bad, their hell starts in Barzakh. Those who are in between, they would be sleeping. So this person had palace, he had trees, you know, garden, everything. But every, I don't know, few hours, a snake was coming and biting him, and he had very great pain and suffering. Then was okay. So this alim, whose name, everything, details, all are mentioned there, asked him, why you have this? You are in such a good position. What is this? He said, once I was passing by a shop, and there was a dispute between the shopkeeper and the customer. They were disputing about some financial issue. I wanted to solve the problem. So I said, for example, he said, you have to give me 100 pounds. He said, no, I don't owe you 100 pounds. I said, okay, you give him 50 pounds and finish this. But that was not haq. Because that person really had to pay 100 pounds. But because when I said this, you know, he had no choice. You know, he felt embarrassed. You know, he was not happy in his heart. I am being punished because of that false judgment. Who gave you authority to judge like this? Imagine, even for such a small judgment, you can be suffering. Someone says, you know, I want, for example, give job to this person. You have to be very careful what to say, how to say. This can affect the life of that person. Someone comes for advice to you. Or when, we, for example, we want to elect people. When we want to, for example, decide about religious issues. So many things that we every day, you know, decide, but we are not careful. That every decision, every word, every statement has to be presented to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, and we should have hujjah in front of Allah to say.
That was the Characters of Shia Community by Hujjatul Islam, Dr. Shomali, and the program, The Spiritual Message of Islam.
I'm looking back throughout the years to breathe is hard and my eyes are choked with tears. Your face and hair are full of light. Now it will soon be time to go. I feel you feeling calm now. Did the angel let you know?
Oh Allah, please send your salutations to Muhammad and all Muhammad. Oh Allah, please forgive us. Please forgive all our sins and mistakes and shortcomings. Please enable us to serve you with full honesty and truthfulness and sincerity. Oh Allah, please hasten the reappearance of Imam Zaman Ajjalallahu Ta'ala Farajahu Sharif. Please make our Imam Zaman happy with what we do and what we say. Please answer his du'as for his faraj. Please give shifa to all people who are ill. Please give shifa to people who are ill in their body and in their soul. Oh Allah, please send your rahmah, your forgiveness to all who have passed away, especially brothers and sisters who were attending these majalis in this community and other communities. Our parents, our foreparents, our teachers, our ulama, our maraje, those who have passed away. Please let them be with Muhammad and all of Muhammad right now. And please give long life and blessed life to the parents and to the teachers and maraja who are alive. Oh Allah, please make the last moment of our life the best moment of our life. Wa akhiru da'wana and alhamdulillahi rabbil alameen.
My ummah, he will say, Rasulullah on that day, even though we've strayed from him and his way. My brothers, my sisters in Islam, let's struggle, work and pray. If we are to bring back the glory of his way. Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 49 meters, 7,300 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.